Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In 2019, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced a non-binding resolution for a Green New Deal into Congress. It didn't pass, but it has been successful in creating a vision for addressing the reality of man-made catastrophic climate change, which is something that we are now experiencing. And now, in the shadow of the recent presidential election and Donald Trump about to take office, does that mean any chance of a Green New Deal ever passing is dead? Well, no, not if we start thinking about a Green New Deal from below. Jeremy Brecher is the author of the book, The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate Safe Economy. And Jeremy, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks very much for having me. It's good to be talking with you and your audience.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I think this is a critically important topic, and I appreciate your approach. When the Green New Deal from below, did you come up with that, or is that a term that's being kicked around quite a bit?
I thought I came up with it, and then I ran across it in a statement by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, who was one of the initiators of the current Green New Deal from below, Green New Deal movement. She mentioned the Green New Deal from below, so I'll give her the credit for the term.
Yeah, well, you picked it up and you ran with it.
Exactly.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment about a Green New Deal, a people-powered Green New Deal from below, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And you can also send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. So what could a Green New Deal, people-powered Green New Deal, local organizing do about this huge global problem of climate change?
Well, it's global, and therefore it's also local. Every pound or ton of carbon and other greenhouse gases that's poured into the atmosphere, it doesn't matter whether it's poured in Texas, in Connecticut, where I live, in Paris, in Shanghai, in Moscow, it goes into the overall carbon pollution and atmospheric destruction and climate destruction of the globe. There, it is truly global warming caused by human activity all over the globe, and it has to be fixed. It has to be limited, and we have to find alternatives at every local level around the globe. So what you do in Texas, or what we do in Connecticut, or what people do in Nebraska is just as important as what people do anywhere else in the world.
Well, I might argue that what happens in Texas is more important, you know, because of all the states and the nation that is the biggest polluter, you know, Texas is the biggest polluter of all the states. I mean, I think that this is where we're at the tip of the spear. If we could fix things here, the rest would be cake.
That's absolutely true. And at the same time, it's one of the places where the opportunity for making the transition to clean, safe, people-friendly energy can have the biggest gains, because you guys have a lot of sunlight down there, mm-hmm. and you're already in the lead on the
wind?
Transition to fossil to solar energy, and there's a lot further you can go in that direction.
All right, and Texas has been called Saudi Arabia of wind because the way the geography is here. So also here in San Antonio and up in Austin, these are two cities where the power company is locally owned. They're owned by the cities. And so the local community can have a lot of influence on where that power will be coming from.
And that makes a lot of difference And in the book, I give a number of instances where a community-owned, municipally-owned power systems have been able to make tremendous strides toward clean energy and toward organizing their energy in a way that is supportive of jobs and supportive of more racial and ethnic justice in their communities. This is a big advantage of power, municipal and state-owned power.
The advantage of trying to push up a Green New Deal, and that's basically we're asking the people to say, grab hold of this idea, activate it, do things, and push it up, because obviously we can't count on the powers at the top to bring it to below, because they're obviously influenced by the 1% and the energy companies, the petroleum companies. So it's got to come from the people. It's going to come from somewhere, right?
That's absolutely right. That doesn't mean in the end we don't need to win the federal government to the kinds of climate protection Green New Deal programs that we need. But there's nothing to keep us from going ahead and doing it on our own as a building block for a national, even a global Green New Deal and climate safe energy system.
And the good news is it makes sense. Having a Green New Deal, doing renewable energy, it makes sense on almost every level if you're not a stockholder in some of these oil companies. And for example, today, the Federal Reserve out of Dallas released a study showing that battery capacity saved the Texas grid last summer, and it will do so again as we continue to face problems with energy production in the state. That battery capacity is when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine, is be able to keeps the lights on in Texas. And this is despite state efforts to try to play down a battery capacity and boost up gas-powered standby energy production, which is unreliable, expensive, and dirty. So batteries are green, they're good, they make money, and they keep the lights on.
Yeah, and they really have been a game changer in the whole renewable energy world. Precisely, people would say, "Oh, what happens when the sun doesn't shine? What happens when the wind doesn't blow?" And the answer now is clear, and it is protective of our energy security, and it's financially completely feasible. And the answer is, we have batteries for when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow.
Batteries are getting bigger, they're getting better, and they're getting cheaper all the time. So cheap you can't even ignore it. They work, and they're working longer than people expected that they would work. They're not exhausting themselves like they had predicted. So we got a lot to talk about, particularly what are communities doing? How is the Green New Deal from below actually coming into being with communities, with organizing? What does this do for jobs and labor and good jobs? So give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or a comment, this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
The City of San Antonio Revitalize SA Corridor Leadership Program offers no-cost training for those interested in neighborhood commercial corridor revitalization. Over 9 months, participants will obtain leadership and strategy skills and have an opportunity for grant funding. Applications at sanantonio.gov/EDD/Revitalize SA. This nonprofit message is underwritten by the Economic Development Department.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. President-elect Donald Trump has made clear his opposition to the Green New Deal and green energy initiatives, framing these efforts as detrimental to the U.S. economy and energy independence. wrong and wrong. Trump has promised to roll back federal support for renewable energy programs and reinstate policies that favor fossil fuels such as coal, oil, and natural gas. But there are ways for people to push back. You can resist this effort that is going to just accelerate climate change and put people in harm's way and also worsen the economy. And the solution could be a Green New Deal from below. Jeremy Brecher has written a book called The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate Safe Economy. So on that part of the book title, frequently authors work more on that, you know, after the title. So tell me about how ordinary people are building a just and climate safe economy, Jeremy.
Well, I went through the book and looked from the place references to Texas in the index. But this book has more than 100 case studies of Green New Deal from below type programs in 40 states, more than 40 states. And they're all different. They're all based on what people need and feel they can do in their locality. But they're all based on making a climate safe economy in a way that we can also have them be creating good jobs and creating more racial and gender and other forms of justice. So just looking at a couple of Texas examples, Dallas is purchasing 100% of its power as green power. And it was given an award by the United States Conference of Mayors for the Mayor's Climate Protection Award. So that's an example of a city being 100% clean energy and a leader in the country. There was a youth climate group called the Sunrise Movement, which, as a matter of fact, kicked off the whole Green New Deal movement 5 years ago. In one Texas city, they fought in the city council and won the right of students in grades 6 through 12 to ride free on the Dallas area rapid transit. Another campaign that's very much in line with the whole Green New Deal idea, both of converting not only our economy, but our whole culture to climate safe things like public transit. The one that intrigued me most, because I haven't heard anything about it anywhere else, was a system of air monitors for Dallas and Fort Worth area, where it made it possible for residents to have access to real-time air pollution data. And that was another local initiative. So these are examples. There are many other kinds as well.
Right. So do you see your book as kind of a how-to book that people might read it and would get ideas and inspiration? Well, they're doing it in Boston. Maybe we can do that here.
That is absolutely right. That really was the core reason that I wanted to do this book. And I've already, you know, it's already making people sit up and think, gee, what could we do here?
Right, I'm going to get a caller here. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on the air.
David, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
The Georgia Guidestones, the monument that stood from 1980 to 2022, had 10 inscriptions, perhaps 10 precepts for reconstructing society following a global catastrophe of some sort. The first two inscriptions read, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature, guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. That makes a lot more sense than the reckless abandon of be fruitful and multiply. We have too many people, and in the long run, decreasing the human population is the only way to go. Fewer births, more birth control. I mean, we talk about human activity being the cause of all of these climate issues that we're facing. It's not the marmosets. It's not the chickens. It's not the giraffes. It's us. And we gotta put ourselves in perspective.
Randall, thank you for that. Well, those guide stones didn't have instructions on how to rebuild them after they got blowed up by someone's pipe bombs, so they no longer exist. I wouldn't take what the guide stone says as gospel because they're not in the gospel. But get your reaction to that, Jeremy. Was Thanos right?
Well, certainly the issues of population and population growth are important for many types of environmental issues. I think that to make a couple of points here. One is that turns out that freedom and dignity for women is one of the prime sources worldwide for limitation of population growth, and that the societies that have had more, as we used to say, women's liberation are overwhelmingly societies that have a stable birth rate. And the ones where women have no role except to bear children, and where they're bearing children is more or less compulsory, are the societies where population has soared. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. Of course, the availability of contraception makes it possible and easier for people to control their own fertility and for societies to control the fertility of society. But I think the question of the role of women and creating more equal roles for women is actually a very important part of how you practically go about having control and limitation on population. The right. Other thing to keep in mind is that the contribution of greenhouse gas pollution destroying the climate is hugely more skewed by class and income, so that both within our country and worldwide, the rich produce a huge amount more climate destroying pollution than ordinary folks do. And so you could kill off the poorest half of the population of the world, and it would have a tiny effect on climate pollution if you restricted the jet planes of the ultra rich. You would have a far greater effect right there. So it's not just the number of people, but that the people at the top are engaging in huge amounts of pollution production.
Another caller, let's go to Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you very much, David, for another great program. My comment is that I think organizing local groups is very important because they are the voters who put the legislators into office and the regulators into office. I would like to say that I think that the most important task and the first task of any local group should be to educate their members and to educate local people as to how they can really make a difference when they go to the polls, and that they need really solid information to support what they have to say in terms of the damage that we are doing to our climate that is also accelerating global warming and causing the cost to insurance companies that are now beginning to deny insurance in those in many areas. So education, I think, should be the primary focus, and very solid information at the local level. For example, telling people what the Railroad Commission actually does, that it has nothing to do with railroads, but it has a lot to do with their local environments with the permits that they issue.
All right. Thank you, Sister Elizabeth. Appreciate your calls always. And just to put a finer point on that, today the Railroad Commission called on the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, to stop Biden's methane rule rollout in Texas. That methane rule is a big deal when it comes to trying to stop climate change. We see this really at the statewide level in Texas being played out. And, you know, we just had an election. And, yeah, and the Republicans in Texas are easily won office again, and apparently people don't mind.
The methane story is an interesting one because it was said for a long time that methane was wonderful because it would be a bridge fuel to get from get off of oil and get onto natural gas, which is turns out that the methane produced by natural gas is probably a worse destroyer of the climate than either certainly greater than coal and probably greater than petroleum also. So, and this points out also the importance of what your caller said, which is really education, finding out what the reality is rather than the kind of fossil fuel company sponsored propaganda that we're all subject to is really crucial to ordinary people taking charge of their lives and their environment.
Right. Let me ask you, so have you seen that new TV show, A Landman? You know, it's about a Texas oil company, and it's basically pro-petroleum or energy propaganda gussed up as entertainment, and people are loving it.
Yeah. This is, and of course, millions and millions and millions of dollars are spent both on direct advertisement and lobbying efforts, but also exactly on these kinds of insidious ways of trying to persuade us to things that are completely against our interests.
Yeah, there's a clip from that show where the star of it is railing about how a wind turbine will never save enough energy to justify its existence as a green energy source. And he's completely wrong. Everything he said is wrong, but yet it's being, you know, clipped and shows up in my social media feed all the time as if this was an actual fact. But it is some dialogue that was written in order to, like, it sounds like it was written by the oil industry.
Yeah. Well, I wish I'd been a fly in the wall when they were making the decisions about doing that movie.
Well, I think it was more about who the grease in the palm than the fly on the wall.
Right. No, I would like to have been there to watch secretly how those decisions were made, because I think your suspicion makes very good sense.
All right. So we're getting ready to hit another break here. We're talking about the book, The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate Safe Economy. We're having a conversation with the author, Jeremy Brecher. He is also a labor organizer. He is looking at this from the perspective of what does having a sustainable, renewable energy economy do for us trying to prevent catastrophic climate change, but also creating good jobs, social justice, dealing with poverty, dealing with health outcomes that we're dealing with as well because of the air contamination and other issues that we're dealing with. So we're going to keep talking about that in the next break. I have a caller, William, and I'm like, William, I'll get you on the air when we come back from this break. And if you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this.
This program is recorded from an earlier live broadcast.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. What if the people had enough of the government in Washington, D.C., inabilities to deal with what is clearly a climate emergency. We've had the wildfire storms happening in California. We're dealing with the constant drought here in the San Antonio area of Texas. We know that now that sea level rise is happening faster than in the Gulf of Mexico than anywhere else. We see all sorts of huge signs that we are living in the age of climate change, and Washington, D.C. right now is not able to provide solutions. So what if the people got together and they demanded and they organized and they started doing it themselves? Well, that is what Jeremy Brecher writes about in his book, The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy. And you can join in. The number of the conversation, 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK, and we have William on the phone. And William, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Wonder if the guests could comment on the role of anthropogenic heating when it comes to warming of the earth versus greenhouse gases. Thank you.
All right, William, thank you for that. Jeremy?
Can you just repeat the question, please?
So, William, you're back on the air. Explain the question a little bit more.
The role of anthropogenic heating, that is heat that's produced when any energy source is consumed, whether it's petroleum, solar, nuclear, all results in a heat content that's increased dramatically since the 50s, and it's just directly related to the consumption.
So the trapping of heat in on the planet is not just the energy coming in from the sun, but it's also coming from our generation. And so we're trapping that heat as well, William?
Yes, but in addition to trapping from the sun, when we burn a barrel of oil in the form of gasoline or natural gas, whatever, that the end result of that is heat. Whether it's consumed in a power plant or in a car or at home, and that heat goes into the atmosphere and results in the heating of the atmosphere. And it's a cumulative effect over decades and decades.
All right, William, thank you for the call. Jeremy, any response?
The overwhelming cause of global warming is the burning of fossil fuels. The heat that we produce, normally the heat before greenhouse gas emissions that are the main drivers of climate change, before them, heat from the earth could rise up and escape from the atmosphere with the creation of greenhouse gas emissions and they're filling the atmosphere. The sun's rays come in, they hit the earth, but the heat that they produce can't get out again. And so you're absolutely right that the burning of fuels like oil, gas, natural gas, and coal have a huge warming effect on the earth because the heat that they release cannot, because they create greenhouse gases that prevent the heat from escaping. I don't think that other forms of heating, as far as my understanding goes, have a significant effect on the what we call global warming. So, for example, solar energy is used to make heat. Geothermal energy is used to make heat. Wind energy is used to make heat. But that heat does not have a significant effect on the warming of the Earth's atmosphere.
So, Jeremy, we've talked about all the different areas that if a Green New Deal from Below was activated and became a movement in a way that we were able to see change, that all these different areas just basically tell you that we need coalitions. If there are people who are concerned about health outcomes in poorer neighborhoods, if we have people who are concerned about, you know, obviously the climate, but also water, jobs, good paying jobs, dealing with inflation, then, you know, then this is a rallying point, and that this is where people should, this is the tent that people should gather under?
I think that that's one of the most important things about the Green New Deal from below. In all of these more than 100 locations and incident activities that I've talked about in the book, almost all of them are the result of coalitions where different groups got together. Of course, almost all of them or all of them are concerned about climate, as we all are. But in addition, groups that had specific needs and specific issues and problems. For example, where you have a coal-fired power plant located in a in or near a low-income community, which is where a huge disproportionate number of them are located, you often get a coalition that includes environmentalists who are concerned and climate advocates who are concerned about the climate effects of that coal-fired power plant in alliance with the people in that community who are the ones that are suffering the asthma and other health effects from the plant. You have a widespread program. For example, Illinois had Green New Deal style legislation that's going to shut down all of its coal-fired power plants over the course of a decade or so. They have strong provision. This was backed both by the representatives of low-income communities and communities of color, but also by the state's trade union movement, because it includes, first of all, lots and lots of jobs are going to be created making that renewable energy that's going to replace the coal plants. And second of all, because it has a strong program to help the workers in the communities where those coal-fired power plants are going to be shut down and to have what's called a just transition so that the workers and communities that are directly involved have a good future. So it's absolutely almost all of these Green New Deal programs, when they're community-based or state-based or county-based, they all involve coalitions, very often of unions, very often of various people of color groups.
Neighborhoods, churches.
Absolutely, and climate and environmentalists.
Let's go to a caller, Gil. And Gil, you're on the air, Gil.
Great, thank you. So my question is pertaining back to the oil and gas exploration. We hear a lot of the political right pretty much saying the only way to, you know, we want to be energy independent, and the only way to be energy independent is to drill, drill, drill. How do we state the obvious that you cannot be energy independent on a finite source? Eventually, we're going to run out of oil and gas. So how do we counter that proficiently and just get our point across that, hey, this is not the way towards energy independence?
All right. Right. Thank you, Gil. And obviously, the math doesn't work on that. But Jeremy?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, what could be more independent than a solar collector or a windmill that's in a particular geography and is producing energy for a local or regional or national market.
Right. And for your electric car, you don't need to buy gas from across the planet. You know, it's right there. You just plug in your car and it was sun collected, you know, nearby.
Yeah. So I think that the energy independence argument has a lot wrong with it. That's one part. The other thing is that the whole fossil fuel industry, all parts of it, are totally globalized. If you want to say we're threatened by the global economy, there's no way that we're threatened by the global economy more than by the dependence on a global fossil fuel industry. And we're especially, in terms of price, the price for oil and the price for coal and gas is set in the world market. It's not a national market. The oil companies, if they can sell at a higher price because there's more demand in Russia or more demand in Italy or more demand in China, that's going to raise the price of oil, and we're going to be completely dependent on whatever that price is.
Right. So in other words, when people talk about we want energy independence, and the Green New Deal from below will say, yeah, that's exactly what we want as well, and we have the better solution. We can be energy independent by capturing Texas sun, Texas wind, and having Texas batteries, and we're good to go. And we can have Texas oil as well, but it's all in the mix. And so that's energy independence. All right, we're taking a break here, and we're going to come back, and we've got Jody and Edward on the phones. We're going to get you on the air when we come back from this break, talking about the Green New Deal from below. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and the source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The book is The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy. We're speaking with the author, Jeremy Brecher. Let's go to a caller, Jody. And Jody, you're on the air. Go ahead, Jody.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm Jody Glessis. I'm with the Environmental Advisory Committee of the San Antonio River Authority. And last night, we had a wonderful panel at the Alamo College's district headquarters, sponsored by the Greater Edwards Aquifer Authority, led by Annalisa Peace and Debbie Reed. And former Councilwoman Anna Sandoval was leading the panel. We had Tommy Calvert there, had a wonderful discussion about things like the tree fund and where that, you know, the mysterious ways that money's being used. But I think the important takeaways that we had from this community discussion was that, you know, if you're concerned about climate, you know, please get involved, you know, run for office, do climate work as far as your employment or volunteer. And also we need to be mindful of, you know, the Texas legislature trying to strip away environmental regulations under the guise of trying to build more affordable housing, because it's going to bite us in the long run and affect our environment and our quality of life in terms of water and heat areas. And you know, we really need to protect the most vulnerable people that are affected by climate change. So, I hope that just know that there are organizations out there. And even if you do that, just get on a mailing list so you can stay informed. Get on the mailing list for the Greater Edwards Aquifer Authority. There's organizations out there, and we are all trying to do what we can to mitigate and prepare for the climate change that's coming. That's already here.
Well, Jody, thank you for the call. Jeremy, what's your reaction to Jody's call?
Well, first of all, I think it's excellent advice. It's more than advice. It's really a call to people to become involved. Educate themselves, as a previous caller said, and then take action together with other people. And that's what my book is about. That's what's happening all over the country. It's not that visible because it doesn't get reported on. It's not like a top government official making a statement. It's local people at the grassroots doing the things that need to be done. On the question of affordable housing, I would say affordable housing is a key part of the Green New Deal and of the Green New Deal from below. You'll find a lot of examples of local municipal building of housing, affordable housing, and it needs use of green energy and the conversion to renewable energy is actually one of the key elements of making affordable housing. So the idea that somehow the two have a contradiction, or you could do one without the other, a key piece of making housing affordable is to convert to renewable energy.
Now the caller, Edward, and Edward, you're on the air.
There we go, David, back to calling regularly. first, I just wanted to say I really appreciate the topic, you guys. I was possibly born with, but definitely grew up having asthma that may have been environmentally induced, as we all know. So it's a big care about for me. But I also wanted to kind of point, especially because this subject that I'm about to comment on has come up on your show before, pretty recently, a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, and I have firsthand experience with it as well. The incentivizing that programs like the Green New Deal and other governmental incentivization programs needs to be very careful about the local level, actually, since it's been mentioned. There's a pretty extreme problem with this gold rush of, say, solar incentives that results in a lot of fly-by-night companies. I can drive around any neighborhood in San Antonio, Texas, and see countless homes with solar panels facing the wrong way. There's also a notable senior citizen kind of being scammed kind of problem going on with these companies. So justice and just energy production is great, but not if it financially scams the elderly, and not if the installation is done completely wrong because a bunch of fly-by-night gold rush companies have sprung up because of government incentives. That's my comment.
All right, Edward, yes, and we have covered this before, and we talked extensively about the problems of these, as Edward calls them, fly-by-night solar roof companies. But that doesn't mean that this solar is a negative. Jeremy, your take on that?
I think it's actually a very valid point. You're not the only place that has this as a problem, but I think it's not the fact of incentives, but that the idea that we're going to give people incentives, we're going to lay out money, whether it's from a private homeowner or from the government, without having any controls on these companies, not having any requirements that they maintain proper standards. In the state that I'm in, Connecticut, we have a Green Bank, which is the main funder of solar installations, residential and commercial both. They keep a pretty good eye on who are responsible installers, who are playing by the rules. They're a place you can go to with complaints, and they have can use the purse strings to make sure that companies that are the kind of fly-by-night companies that the caller described are not the ones that are getting the money. And I have heard very few complaints of the kind that your caller raised and that are definitely raised in other places. So I don't think it's a problem of incentives per se, it's certainly not a problem of solar energy per se, but of the idea that government should just be a passive giveaway of anyone who comes along and
sure,
says,
and it really wasn't government incentives that these people were not getting the government incentives. That's what's caused the economic problems with these people. They were being sold a false bill of goods, and they were being lied to about government incentives. That was the problem. And really, if someone comes to your door and does some hard sell techniques to get you to buy solar, my advice to you is to close that door because you are not going to be served well. So when you talk about the Green New Deal from below, I think what we're really talking about is democracy from below, Jeremy, because, I mean, this is what people want. The Green New Deal that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez first proposed polled very high. People want this. However, we can't get it because the oligarchs and the people who run the country now don't want the people to have it. So not only do we need Green New Deals from below, but we need really more grassroots and pretty much everything that we do want.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think one of the key contributions of the Green New Deal, why should we bother to vote? Why should we get involved with politics? Why should we become active in one way or another in the political system? There have to be things that are make it worthwhile for people. And what the Green New Deal from below does is say, if you become involved in going to a meeting of your city council, if you go talk to your state legislator, if you organize with your neighbors to demand clean energy programs of many kinds, you can win things of exactly the kind of Green New Deal from below programs that we've been talking about. And that's why it's worthwhile to do it. That's why it's worthwhile to insist that your government not be dominated by millionaires and billionaires and who knows, soon by trillionaires, and instead by the people that it's supposed to represent.
But what do you make of the fact that the majority of Americans, it's a slim majority, but a majority of Americans supported a candidate who was opposed to the Green New Deal, was opposed to green energy, and embraces the climate change denialism? I mean, is it like, oh, throw up your hands, we lost?
Well, first thing to keep in mind, there was a poll that was done less than a month after the election, asking people whether they approved or disapproved of Trump. And 41% approved, 55% disapproved. So even immediately after the election in which he was elected, most people did not.
There's no backseas. He's going to be president.
Right, right. But I think in terms of understanding, so first of all, there's a question of, you know, a basically largely unknown candidate who was running against him.
But in the light of that, of these results, no. You know, now's the time for people really to, you know, mobilize, I imagine. You know, this is a way to resist Trump. If you don't like what he says, if you don't like what he does, you do have power.
Right. And it's exactly, it's a way of outflanking the whole MAGA
agenda
by making our own agenda at a local and municipal.
That would mean cleaner energy, better health outcomes, better incomes, all sorts of solutions. We just need to, you know, come together, unite. Jeremy Bretcher, thank you so much. The book is The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.